Hey folks, and welcome to the first podcast of Unit 4. This time around, we're going to be looking at something which is both the darling and the demon of the online learning world. The concept has attracted more hype than probably anything else in education in recent years, and it often splits opinion in a pretty vocal fashion. Of course, I'm talking about MOOCs. Well, let's see if today we can untangle the argument. Enjoy! So, MOOCs, or Massively Open Online Courses, to give them their full name, they're certainly a hot topic. Whichever side of the debate you're on, you can't really deny the effect they've had on online education, which is massive, to excuse the pun. Before we get into it, I shouldn't really assume you have a clue what I'm talking about. A MOOC is a course which is free to take part in and open to everyone, hence the first O in the title. It's a course which is delivered to a large amount of people, sometimes hundreds of thousands, hence the massive, and they're delivered fully online and often by pretty big, prestigious universities. So they're opening up world-class teaching to the masses, to people that would never have had a chance to take part before. And that's where the debate comes in. On one side, you can't really argue that more free education is a bad thing, and especially when it's from the likes of Stanford in the US or Edinburgh Uni over here. But on the other, some have found it pretty ineffective. The student experience suffers and completion rates are abysmal. But it's free. Of course they will be. Does that matter? Anyway, we're now at a stage that the hype has died down. We've passed the trough of disillusionment and have reached the slope of enlightenment. Nice images, eh? Check out Hype Cycle on Wikipedia for a bit more on that. But basically it means we're ready to rationally delve into what MOOCs have to offer. So, thinking student experience, what pedagogy are MOOCs built on? Well, I thought I'd get an expert in to talk about it. Let's meet Amy.
So my name is Amy Woodgate. I'm the project manager for the Distance Education Initiative and MOOCs at Edinburgh University. So it's all part of our online learning digital education expansion.
So obviously Edinburgh University have big plans in this area, but let's see what position Amy's team is in right now.
So at the moment we have 23 MOOCs. There's 6 new courses that have just been announced, and the ones that are most in the kind of the forefront of our minds are Introduction to Programming, which is a collaboration with Uruguay. So it's being delivered in both Spanish and English, not as a translation exercise, as a kind of a true collaboration, which is in itself fairly innovative in terms of how do you develop content internationally.
Now, this is really interesting to me and really brings out one of the obvious strengths of MOOCs. Not only are they available everywhere, that's a given, but they can be delivered from anywhere, including from multiple locations. So Amy's students will soon be learning about programming from both a UK and a Uruguayan point of view. That's got to make for a more inclusive course just by default, surely. Now, one of the first things I wanted to clear up was the split between the subcategories of MOOCs. Here's Amy to explain.
So at the very start, there was definitely a division on the ground. The sector was labelling MOOCs as either C or X MOOCs. So C for constructivist and connectivism, and X for what is more typically seen in the MOOC space now of a more linear progression through content, predominantly video-based.
Okay, so a C MOOC means connectivism, constructivism. What does that mean in the course itself?
You are part of a community, you build those connections and you communicate with peers and essentially create the content rather than the content being created for you.
Okay, perfect. Now, what about XMOOCs?
So XMOOCs are what you would typically see on your Coursera, FutureLearn, edX platforms. Content developed by a university, standalone, short course that has a defined start and end point, even if that start and end point is no longer defined by the individual institution, rather being defined by the learner.
So XMOOCs are made of content with a natural flow. We build learning materials, you work through it, and you get your completion certificate at the end. That sounds familiar.
Now, after the HEA report earlier this year from Sean Bain and Jim Ross saying that essentially the CX distinction is not necessarily as useful as perhaps it has been in the past, given that so many courses are trying to blur the social aspect as well and trying to create something that's a little bit more blended in its approach to content either being provided up front or developed by the community.
Oh well, we learn it and then it disappears. But really, it's useful to know the distinction and to give us an idea of the different formats MOOCs might follow. Now, it's useful to realise that when it comes down to brass tacks, perhaps they're not quite as innovative as they pretend. Perhaps there's not quite that much to fear.
We sometimes become fixated that MOOCs are something new, and actually they're not. We've been doing short courses online for a very long time, but it's the number of universities that have simultaneously developed content in co-location, which has been the innovation, if you will.
Alrighty, so that's our definition of MOOCs and a little about how they might work. It's time to look at the details though. One of the first concerns people often have with MOOCs is support. Let's be honest, it's not a small job supporting 50 students in a class. So when you start talking about tens of thousands, it seems a bit ridiculous. Both a lack of support and a sense of isolation are two of the big criticisms often levelled at the format. So I was interested to see how Amy and her team mitigated that.
I think one of the strengths of the MOOC space is actually the incredible enthusiasm of a very large number of learners. We have not only obviously dedicated support and paid for time that goes in both from the academics and teaching assistants, etc., but what we try and build in is that element of allow the community to build themselves.
Okay, that seems sensible, but possibly easier said than done. But then Amy went on to explain a unique approach that they have to supporting students. From her point of view, less is generally more.
There's a point where if you are too present in the forums as the academic voice, if you know, the representation of the university, you find this all the time in typical learning scenarios where if you're too visible and you answer too quickly, then the peers don't necessarily feel as empowered to answer one another, to support one another, because their question has already been answered, rather than building a conversation. So we have a minimum requirement in the session space of TA presence, so teaching assistants, and that's roughly an hour per day the course is live. But what we try and support the teaching assistants to realise is that it's about being present, being seen through kind of the occasional post, but not trying to blitz it and answer everything, quite the opposite. It's about giving things time to cement and build from the community, because you might find that actually that question is very quickly answered by a number of members of the community before you even get to see it.
I think this is pretty important. It might be obvious to some, the whole concept of holding off, but I've seen a lot of examples of the opposite, and I've done it myself. It's easy to fall into the trap of being as supportive as you can and helping people straight away, getting in there, chatting away, posting as much as you possibly can. That's what makes a good teacher in person, after all, you'd imagine, that presence. But this is a very different context, and in a MOOC, there's no way you can support everyone, so you have to encourage them to help themselves. Note in that too, the time allocated for Amy's teaching assistants to teach on the course. They've got 1 hour per day throughout the whole course, and that's not a huge amount. So once the materials are created, perhaps MOOCs aren't so onerous to run after all. Okay, it's time to look into one of the aspects of the whole MOOC phenomenon that draws the most flack to the platform. You could say there are quite a few, but to me, the biggest of them all is success.
Success means something very different to every group of individuals that's involved in the build and the delivery. Every institution has a different measure. Some institutions take a very hard line of it's all about the numbers, and others, like ourselves, take a slightly more liberal approach, perhaps you could say, that success means things, different things to different people, and so we should embrace that.
I like that, and it tackles that debate I mentioned head on. There are a lot of detractors talking MOOCs down, looking at the huge dropout rates and claiming that they can never pay back the money invested. But the measure of success for a MOOC can be different in every institution, depending on their aims.
So when we talk to the individual academics, we say, did you enjoy the experience? Did you feel that you got something out of that? Did it match your expectations? And was that a good or bad thing? You know, the whole point of this for us is research and development, you know, to be in this educational space, to take some risks, to try new things, to push our own boundaries, to start considering whether things that we've taken for granted are actually the best way to deliver content, or whether we do need to be more aesthetically driven, or whether we do need to consider the social domain slightly more on campus, or encourage our students to take more risks. And I think that's where it's been particularly valuable for us, that we carved out a space that was in many ways a safe space for taking those risks.
That's interesting. Amy sees MOOCs as a place to safely take risks. I'll bet many people see it as almost the opposite, somewhere where the world can see your content and where you might be judged. But you're not charging, so the judging should be less extreme. And at the end of the day, it's still your own academics producing it, so the quality is going to be good. And if it helps you discover the old ways aren't the best ways anymore, then that's got to be worth even a pretty big risk. So more reasons to give it a shot in your own context. Anyway, I think there were some great insights there on how to measure success from the institution's perspective, but maybe we're forgetting something here. What about the student? Well, Amy and her team prefer to let the student set their own objectives.
In the MOOC space, because it is open and because people are coming for multiple reasons, you know, success may just be, I want to dip in, have a look, see that particle physics is not for me, and dip back out again. Fantastic. So we made sure that at the very, very start, our entry surveys throughout us are not asking necessarily whether or not they want to get a certificate. It's part of a wider frame of what is it you hope to achieve in this space? What is it that you wish to acquire? What's your purpose of being here? Is it just to learn new things? Is it to meet new people? Is it to try online learning, see what this MOOC stuff is all about, and so on and so forth?
So we check at the start whether the student has any intention of viewing the whole course before deciding that it's a failure when they don't. This is great. We can then judge success against the student's own aims, and we can even let them judge themselves when they've passed.
And then at the end, the exit survey, it may be that they had a particular intention at the start, but through engaging with the course content or not, their expectations or their motivations may equally evolve. And so at the end, we say, did it match your expectations? Did it meet your credit? Did you feel that you got a good experience? And from that, we ask in a number of different ways whether they felt for themselves it was a successful experience.
So we don't actually care whether they viewed every single piece of material or not. We just want to know whether it met their expectations, whether what they did do was of benefit. And if it was, then surely that's a success for them and us, no matter how much of the course they viewed. Amy and I finished our chat with a great point around the dropout hysteria and the masking effects of the huge numbers we're working with on MOOCs.
But I think if we flip it the other way, and rather than fixating on the dropouts and look at the number of people that have engaged with us through to the very end, you know, we've distributed already over 80,000 certificates of completion, which if you're always looking at the 1.2 million that have signed up with us, you would think, well, that's quite a low conversion rate. But if we flip the other side and go, 80,000 people now have a certificate with us, that's insane. Those are incredibly large numbers. You know, we're talking about many, many years of university graduates before we reach even half of that. And I think sometimes we've become a little desensitized by these big numbers and fixated on the conversion. And we forget that actually a huge number of people have had an opportunity to engage with higher education that perhaps may not have had that opportunity before. Yes, we know that 70%, if not more, have degrees already. But for the 30% that don't, that's still, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have had learning opportunities that they may not have had access to without the MOOC space being available.
It's really hard to argue with those numbers. That's a big benefit for a lot of people. Well, that finishes off our conversation around MOOCs. I hope you now have a better idea of the types of MOOCs out there, how they work, and what benefits there might be for you and your students. If you're now moved to MOOC, then good luck and enjoy it. Thanks for listening, folks. I hope you got a lot out of today's podcast. Remember, it'd be great to hear from you. Let us know what you think. You can drop a comment on the podcast page at thepodcasthost.com/SBOSE. Please do let us know what you think, and we'll see you on the next episode.